Just spread a little bit too.
Okay. So we left off discussing this scenario. I'll just read it again quickly. The children are playing in the basement while the adults enjoy the Shabbos meal upstairs. And when the time came to put away the toys, so there's some electronic toys that were taken off of the shelves. And they're on the floor underneath the toy rack. They're not in anybody's way, but they're not put away in their proper place where they belong. So we want to be polite and put everything back in its proper place, but at the same time, these electronic toys are kelim, shemalachtam le'isser, right? The main purpose is to light up and make sounds and stuff like that. And so you're only allowed to move it letzorech gufo and letzorech mekomo. So the question is, does tzorech politeness count in the same way, right, as tzorech gufo and tzorech mekomo? Tzorech gufo means I actually want to use the toy. I don't want to use the toy right now. Tzorech mekomo means that it's occupying space that I want to use. I don't want to use the space. It's underneath the rack. I don't need that space. But it is some sort of a tzorech for Shabbos, and the question is whether that counts the same as tzorech gufo and tzorech mekomo, or whether it doesn't count the same. And we read on Thursday the relevant Gemaras, which talked about two scenarios that occurred in the Beit HaMikdash that are going to help us define what is considered Tzorech and what is not considered a Tzorech. The first one was the case of the Kanim, this hollow half tube that separated each loaf of Lechem HaPanim from the loaf on top of it. And the Gemara says that you were not allowed to put these tubes into the Seder, into the Tower of Lechem HaPanim on Shabbos, or remove them on Shabbos. And you needed to remove the previous week's tubes on Erev Shabbos, leave the Lechem HaPanim tubeless for the first 15 hours of Shabbos. And then, when you put the new Lechem HaPanim in, you would wait until after Shabbos to put in the tubes of the new Lechem HaPanim. And the Gemara had two explanations for why it was that we're not allowed to touch and move the tubes of the Lechem HaPanim on Shabbos. The first explanation was, this harks back to the times of Nehemiah ben Chachalia, when Chilul Shabbos was still rampant, a legacy from the 70 years of Galus Bavel, and Nehemiah needed to make a very, very strict and broad gzeira against Muktzah in order to reaccustom people to Shmira Shabbos. And so at that point in time, he said, don't move anything except for these three types of knives, utensils and stuff like that. So if that's the case, then once that gzeira was repealed, and once people became more accustomed to Chilul Shabbos, so the Kohanim were allowed to go back and put the tubes in on Shabbos itself. And this Mishnah was just a legacy from that historical time period. That's when this particular Mishnah was composed, and people kept on learning it because that's just the way that Mishnayos were transmitted, that once a Mishnah was composed, you would learn it, and then you would have an addendum, Baal Peh, that this Mishnah is no longer halakhically relevant. However, Shmira Shabbos. So that was the first explanation. Then we had the second explanation, which was the explanation of Rabbah, right? And that name is very important, so keep in mind it's the explanation of Rabbah. Rabbah says that the reason you're not allowed to put these tubes in on Shabbos is because it's not litzorech. There's no tzorech, there's no necessity for doing this, because the whole purpose of intubating the Lechem HaPanim is to prevent them from getting moldy, and leaving them for 15 hours these and 9 or 10 hours those, it's not really going to make a major difference in terms of the Lechem HaPanim getting moldy. And since you don't really need to put these tubes in, therefore there is no heter to put the tubes in. We pointed out that based on this halacha of Rabbah, the Shulchan Aruch paskins that if you have a kli shemelachto leheter, something whose main purpose is allowed to be done, right, on Shabbos, excluding perhaps sfarim and food items and spoons and bowls, but pretty much everything else, a kli shemelachto leheter, like a pair of glasses So the Shulchan Aruch says that if you don't have a good reason, right, to move them, then you shouldn't move them at all. So for example, let's say that I'm going to sleep and I put the glasses on my night table or my dresser, and then I decide, just for no reason whatsoever, you know something, I don't want them to be on this side of my night table, I want them to be on the other side of my night table. I'll put them into a drawer. So if I have no reason at all for transferring the glasses from one place to another, the Shulchan Aruch says that I'm not allowed to do it. Now normally, again, the Aruch HaShulchan points out that if I'm moving something, I probably have a reason for it. Usually if I decide to put my glasses from the night table into the drawer, it's because I'm nervous. Maybe I'll bang them, you know, off the night table in my sleep, or maybe, you know, something else. Maybe it'll be easier for me to find in the morning, right, if it's in the drawer or something along those lines. And so as long as I have that type of a reason, I'm allowed to move the glasses from one place to another. But if it's genuinely for no reason whatsoever, so the Shulchan Aruch paskens, I would not be allowed to move that pair of glasses. And so that it seems to be based on the halakha of Rabbah, who says that since there's no real need to put these half tubes into the lechem apanim, even though they're a klishim alachto leheter, they're designed for something which you're allowed to do on Shabbos, but Rabbah says, nonetheless, I'm not allowed to move them because there is no tzorech. So if you look in the art scroll, Hilchos Muktzah book, that's written by Rav Simcha Bunim Cohen, so he has a kasha on the psak of the Shulchan Aruch. And his kasha is that Rabbah, you saw earlier in the Gemara, takes a non-halachic, meaning a position that we don't accept, right, lemaisa, when it comes to Hilchos Muktzah. Rabbah paskins that a kli shemalachto leheter, right, like a pair of glasses, right, like these half tubes, Rabbah says you're not allowed to move that mechama litzel. If it's in danger of getting damaged, Rabbah says, you're not allowed to move it. If you want to move it to use it, you can do that. If you want to move it to use its place, you can do that. But if it's in danger of getting damaged, Rabbah says, you're not allowed to use it. So in other words, Rabbah would say that if my glasses are on the night table and I'm afraid that in the middle of the night I might knock them off the night table and then step on them and break them, Rabbah says I'm not allowed to move those glasses to protect them from that possibility of damage. Because he says, Mechama l'tzel is aser, I can move it to wear them, I can move it if I want to put something else down on that spot of the night table. But Rabbah is very machmir, we don't accept his chumrah, but he says I can't even move the glasses to protect them from damage. So Rabbi Cohen says, let's see, it makes perfect sense. Rabbah, who says I can't move the glasses to protect them from damage, right, maybe will also say that I can't move the glasses for no reason whatsoever. But maybe we, who paskin that you're allowed to move the glasses to protect them from damage, perhaps we'll say that by the same way that you're allowed to move them to protect them from damage, you can also move them for no reason whatsoever. In other words, that when Nehemiah repealed, right, the gzeira against moving glasses on Shabbos, so not only did he repeal it when it concerned protecting the glasses from damage, but he also repealed it in totality. He said you can move glasses for any purpose whatsoever. So this is his kasha on the Shulchan Aruch. The only solution that he has is he says some Rishonim don't have Rabbah with a hey, but they have Rava with an aleph. And Rava with an aleph said earlier on in the Gemara that the kli shemalachto leheter, you're allowed to move it. Mechama l'tzel, you're allowed to move it to protect it from damage. And even so, he says, that you're not allowed to move these tubes in order, you know, because the advantage, right, the benefit that you get from that is so minute. And so maybe if we're goreis, if the proper, right, girsa in the Gemara is Rava with an aleph and not Rabbah with a hey, so that might be the justification. Maybe the Shulchan Aruch had that girsa in the Gemara. So that's his only defense of the Shulchan Aruch. Pastor that he says maybe the Shulchan Aruch is going with that other girsa. Like, by the way, just, you know, parenthetically, right, this is why it's so important to pay attention to every single letter, right, in the Gemara. Rabbah, hey, Rabbah, what difference does it make? The answer is, sometimes an entire halakha hangs in the balance. If it's Rabbah, so then probably klishim alach leheter, you can move for no reason. If it's Rava, right, so then this Gemara actually served as a good precedent that a klishim alach leheter cannot be moved unless you have a good reason for it. Now, again, we pointed out that the Chazon Ish and others give, you know, important, lenient ruling, right? They say, what happens if you're just fiddling around with something, right? You're twiddling it like, you know, almost like squeezing a stress ball or spinning a fidget spinner or something like that. So you play around with the glass, right? The stems that are fun to, you know, to twist around, right? Or silverware, just, you know, to go up and down in your hand. There's no reason to get out nervous energy. And the Chazon Ish paskins, and that's considered to be a tzorech. It's more necessary than putting these kanim, right, these tubes into the lechem upon him to fiddle around with something in order to get rid of nervous energy. The paskins is considered to be a tzorech. It's considered to be a necessity. It's tzorech gufo. You're using it for an important purpose. It's not considered purposeless.
Stilkit.
Yeah, I don't even know what that means, but.
Pins.
Okay, so to get out.
No,
but it doesn't have. You know, there are some people who are certified, you know, nervous that way. But this psak of the Chazon Ish applies to everybody, even if you're not, you know, a nervous person. You're then it doesn't. I don't know. It's OCD. It's more like ADHD, right? But
You have to do it.
So this is one cooler.
Is one kula. He's famous for his kula in the Shita, and yeah, though he was very machmir about Hefter Mechila, but he was very lenient about everything else when it came to Shita. So Shiurim, he's more machmir about. You can't like put, you know, a person like the Chazon Ish into a box like that. He's so we have again. This is the kula of the Chazon Ish. The only question is like this. I'm wondering, I know that there have been studies about whether fidget spinners actually help people who have, you know, this impulsivity, right? Whether it helps them stay more calm or whether it doesn't help them stay more calm. And I'm pretty sure that I one time read a study that said that the fidget spinners don't help people stay more calm at all. Right? Even though it makes you feel like you're staying more calm, or keeps them quiet. Yes, I would have to wonder what if the studies actually indicate that like a fidget spinner doesn't help people stay more calm. So does that become now to spin a fidget spinner? Now it becomes shelo l'tzorech, right? Just like the tubes.
But the child knows l'tzorech, absolutely. They want to.
That's what they want to do. Because it's like a toy to play with.
Either though, it helps.
That's what I'm wondering about. If you think that it helps you, but scientifically it doesn't help you, and the rabbi knows that scientifically it doesn't help you, so can the rabbi say, oh, for sure, do it, it's a tzorech, it's a necessity, right? Or maybe he's got a pastor based on the science. So that's a question. The Aruch HaShulchan says he can't think of anything, right, that actually would be shelo l'tzorech when it comes to a kli shemalachto leheter. That he can't think of anything which is shelo l'tzorech. If you're moving it, right, so then there's obviously some sort of a reason that you're moving it, because people only act and they only move when they have a reason to do so. So he has this kasha. He says, when is there ever a case of kli shemalachto leheter which is absolutely shelo l'tzorech? It's worth thinking about. I one time saw from Rabbi Salvechik that he had some sort of an example, and I can't remember now what his example was.
But how does he explain Rabbi or Rav?
Well, in the Gemara's case, it's clear that it's shelo l'tzorech.
Okay, fine. But he said there's no such thing.
The Aruch HaShulchan.
Yeah. So even...
You read this Hadoro. Oh, no, my understanding is the following, that if a person is doing it, you know, thoughtlessly, so then presumably the subconscious has some reason for doing it. But if a person is actually calculating, right, and saying, you know something, I think that this is a good idea to do on Shabbos because, right, so let's take, for example, the glasses case, right? So the glasses are on my night table, right, and let's say... that here's where OCD will come in. Let's say that I have an obsession, that I'm nervous that even though they're 5 feet, you know, up, right? But maybe somehow they'll get knocked onto the floor and I'll step on them. So in the middle of the night, I get up and I put them on my closet shelf, which is 7 feet off the floor. So in that case, if I'm able to approach this rationally, there's absolutely no need for me to move the glasses, right, from the dresser to the closet shelf. So if that's the case, I think that would be similar to the case of Kanim. I'm not doing it, right, just, you know, cause for some subconscious reason I feel like I need, right, to move it, to twiddle it around, you know, to spin it or something like that. There's a very, very clear, not really rational, but quasi-rational or faux-rational reason, right, for doing this. And if I'm able to cast that and say, no, this is not really a tzorach, right? It's not really going to decrease the likelihood of the glasses getting broken from something which is a high probability to a low probability. The probability was so low to begin with, right, that this is absolutely unnecessary. That would be a case if a person could catch themselves, you know, again, it's only relevant for a person who's got, you know, obsessions. But
he has OCD to forget. I mean, that's the whole idea. He can't.
Let's say that he's in the middle of therapy, right? So
he's cured himself. Hmm?
No, but even a person, you know, who's in the middle of therapy, if, you know, these things work, is you got to go through the same, you know, the thought exercises in order to get there. So that would be the type of case, like a person who's recovering from OCD, he catches himself in time, so he would not be allowed to move the kli shemalachol lahatra. That would be a genuine iser of muktzah. You can show chapter and verse right in the Shulchan Aruch, but again, it's very, very difficult to find a genuine case of a kli shemalachto leheter, which is usher to move. What's more interesting is what the Mishnah Brura does from this Gemara, applying it to kli shemalachto leiser. And the basic argument of the Mishnah Brura is as follows. He says, Rabba treats a kli shemalachto leheter the same way that we, halakha lemaisa, treat a kli shemalachto leiser. So, for example, right, Rabba says that a kli shemalachto leheter may be moved letzorech gufo letzorech mekomo. We say a kli shemalachto leiser may be moved letzorech gufo letzorech mekomo. Rabba says a kli shemalachto leheter may not be moved mechama letzel. We say a kli shemalachto leiser may not be moved mechama letzel. So the Mishnah Brura says it should follow, therefore, that whatever Rabba says about a kli shemalachto leheter should apply to us with regard to a kli shemalachto leiser, because the rules, right, for one and for the other are the same. So therefore, the Mishnah Brura says, regardless of the Shulchan Aruch's psak about not moving a kli shemalachto leheter for no reason whatsoever, we'll take what Rabba says about kli shemalachto leheter and we'll apply it in our lives to kli shemalachto leiser. So Rabba says you can't move kli shemalachto leheter if there's no tzorech. So we'll paskin, says the Mishnah Brura, that we can't move a kli shemalachto leiser if there's no tzorech. That's his basic structure. Whatever Rabba says about kli shemalachto leheter, will say about kli shemalachto leiser. And so that's over here, the Mishnah Brura's psak is that let's say that I have something that needs to be done, a nut, a coconut that needs to be cracked. And I could use a hammer to crack that coconut. But I could also maybe use a knife or a fork or a spoon, a kli shemalachto leheter. The Mishnah Brura's psak is I cannot use a hammer when there is a spoon or a fork that'll do the job equally well, because it's not letzorech. The same way as in the Beis HaMikdash, now he's going to the second case, and those poles for the Karban Pesach, for spinning the Karban Pesach, the Rabbah said, because you could do it just as well with your hands, you have no right to use the pole. So we'll say, right, the same thing. If you can crack the coconut with your hands or with the kli shemalachto leheter, then you have no right then, says the Mishnah Brura, to use a kli shemalachto leiser. Right? So that would mean I only have to figure out that when it comes to kids' toys. Right? So I want to use an electronic toy, right? Because I want to use it. So let's say I can play with a non-electronic toy. So maybe it would be muktzah for the kid unless they have some sort of a hang-up that they bedafka want to use this toy. Here, why don't you try playing with the black? Try playing with the Duplos.
You know very well. You tell what kid wants to do. If they want to play with that toy, and that's what they want to do,
the more you tell them, the better. tell them no.
Then why do they want to do it?
You say, don't play with this, don't play with this. That's what they want
to
play with.
That's what you have to put in the
middle. Tell them to play with it.
It's not my experience.
What's that?
It's not my experience.
Really?
Really, yes. Because what I found is the following, that sometimes a kid will see a toy and they'll say, oh, I want to play with that toy. But they have toys that they enjoy a lot more that are out of sight, right, and that they're just not thinking of. So sometimes all that you need to do is run downstairs, right, or wherever you keep the toys and bring them the toy that they enjoy more. And then they'll lose interest in the toy that they happen to have seen, right, and they'll play with the toy which they enjoy the most. It doesn't always work, right, but... But it also depends, yeah. All these things, you know, will vary, right, from case to case. But again, it might be that the electronic toys are muktza, assuming, right, that there is a more favorite, you know, toy which is non-electronic. Because again, you can't use a klisha malachto le'ifzer when there's a klisha malachto le'hefter available. So we talked, you know, last week also about using a pen, right, to point at a sefer Torah. So again, that's mutter. I may ikar adin, it's a kishim alachol le'isr, but you're using a letzorach ufo for a permissible, right, purpose. But if there's a silver yad available, so then you've got to use the silver yad and you can't use the pen. The shaila is, if there's a silver yad, but you could use your finger, right, is there any heter to use the silver yad? And that goes back to the Shulchan Aruch, kishim alachol le'heter. Right, but is there a tzorech? Is there no tzorech? How necessary is it, right, to point with the yad as opposed to with your finger? The tall sefer Torah, right, maybe you do need it. Right, a short sefer Torah, right, maybe you don't. I'm nervous that you might touch the sefer Torah. It's hiddur mitzvah to point with a silver yad. Right, so these are all interesting, you know, possibilities. Pashto said you're allowed to use the yad. I think that is the min haga olam to use.
You could also scratch the thing with the eye.
With the eye, yeah. But I think if
fingers not going to do that, he easily has a hang of it already.
What about a wooden hand?
Yeah.
I know.
That's a wooden hand.
If the follow the nail occasionally, then.
Is it a letzorach? That's the question. What's the necessity of having those ornaments? So to make the Sefer Torah, to decorate the Sefer Torah. So I think in general we consider decoration to be a tzorech. So for example, let's say that you have a fancy dish in your china cabinet, and you think it'll, you know, whatever, it falls over, so you want to pick it up again. So that's, that dish, its purpose is to decorate your house, and you need to pick it up in order to do that. That's considered moving a tzorech ufo. It will be permissible. The same thing with a picture, right, on my wall. The purpose of the picture is to decorate the house, and therefore, I'm allowed to move it into a place where it's more aesthetically pleasing. Assuming it's not mukta machmas kasher kis, I'd be allowed to move it because decorating the house is considered to be a tzorech for Shabbos. And I think all the poskim say that decorating the house, making things more aesthetically pleasing, is considered to be a tzorech gufo, which is mutter.
Is also many times hanging with the other adornment.
Yeah.
And it would be with our gufo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so to take it on and put it off, I put it on and take it off, for sure that's mutter. Oh, so there you go. So that's, I think that's why the min haga'olam is to use the yad, right? Because it is actually making, it's enhancing the process of Kriyas HaTorah, and so that's going to be considered to be a tzorech. It's more of a tzorech than using poles for skinning the carbon pesach. It's more of a tzorech than putting in these tubes for the lechem apanim. That's already considered a genuine tzorech. I saw in the Feldheim, the Muksa book, he says, what happens if somebody left a hammer or a calculator or some other non-Shabbistic object, right, on top of your Shabbos tablecloth? So if they left it at a place where you need to put a place setting where someone's actually going to sit, so then you can move it like Tzorech Mekomo. But what if you've got a long table, right? More space at the table than you have guests, and so it's on the other end of the table, right, where you don't need to put anything down. So they say, is it considered a Tzorech in order that the room should look more Shabbistic, right, to move that hammer off the table? And the answer that Rabbi Badner gives, right, in the Feldheim Muktzah book is no, it's not considered to be Tzorech. To have the room look more Shabbistic is not considered to be a Tzorech, and you would not be allowed to move that hammer or that calculator, assuming that it's at the other end of the table where you don't need the space.
Put it on a napkin or something on top.
You can definitely cover it with a napkin. If you wanted, you're allowed to do a trick and you can switch around, right, the table so that you can sit at the tail of the table instead of the head of the table. And now that you've chosen to sit at the tail of the table, so you're allowed to move that hammer in order to make space for you to sit there, but you've got to actually sit there at least, you know, for a significant part of the meal. That would be allowed, but just stem to, you know, to take it.
It's
a harama. Yeah.
The harama is used all the time.
The truth is, we have to check on, I think on a base or else on the next daf we're going to discuss, right, it's clear that a harama is mutter when there's a hefset involved, when there might be a financial, you know, loss, when the object, you know, in question might get broken or damaged, so there harama is mutter. That's an interesting question. I'm pretty sure they say that harama of this type would be mutter, right, in order to move a kli Shemalachto le'isser in order to make the room more Shabbistic, but I will double check that. So what one thing which is clear is that the following, let's say the guests are coming, right, and you're going to be embarrassed and uncomfortable, right, that there is a hammer, right, or a calculator or something, computer, whatever it might be, right, on the table. So then bipashtos, it gets the status of what's called graf shel rei, something which is disgusting. Right, the way that Rav Shlomo Zalman defines that is, Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach says, it's something which causes an ine'imus, an unpleasantness, right, on Shabbos. The question is, how intense does that unpleasantness need to be in order for something to be classified as a graf shel rei? But Rav Shlomo Zalman says that perhaps the bar is, if it's going to make you embarrassed in front of guests, so then it's considered to be sufficiently unpleasant to justify its removal on Shabbos. And so I think that based on that, we would say if guests are coming and you would actually feel embarrassed that they see that, you know, you took out your computer the last minute on Arab Shabbos and then forgot, you know, to put it back, so then you might be allowed to move that computer midin, you know, graf shel rei, because it's going to cause an unpleasantness if you leave it there, you know, when the guests come in. So that, I think, might be mutter. But if it's just going to be your family at home and you're not going to feel, you know, that embarrassment, so then it's not allowed. And so lechora, here's the question. I think this would be mutter also. If your wife realized, right, before you got home that she forgot the computer on the table, and now she's going to be embarrassed when you get home and see that she forgot the computer, so then she's probably allowed to move it, and you didn't graft already to prevent her from being embarrassed, right, in front of her husband, or vice versa. But like once you get home already, and of course you get up and say, no problem, it happens to me all the time, and you know everything else, so then she's not embarrassed anymore and she wouldn't be allowed to move it. But until you get home, she probably would be allowed to move that in order that she shouldn't be embarrassed, you know, about having a little bit of an un-Shabbistic Shabbos table.
How far can you
move it? As far as you want. You can even put it in the garbage if you want. Yeah, it's hard though to justify it based on Maris Ayin, because the Gemara has this interesting discussion about Tzar Bali Chayim, and it comes up with a very creative solution. If there's an animal that's got mukta stuff on its back, Right? A very creative solution to enable the person to get the muktzah off. It says put, you know, blankets underneath the animal and then like sort of, you know, do the, you know, knock it off for achayad, and it's going to form a blanket and it won't break and a whole thing. And the question that the postman asked is, why don't you just justify it by saying, well, tzorech of tzar bali chayim, that's a tzorech also. Just say, take the muktzah off. It's kriyish amalachto le'isr. Take it off the animal because it's to prevent tzar bali chayim. The animal shouldn't have to stand there with the load strapped to its back the whole Shabbat. So this is one of the proofs that they bring in addition, right, to Rabbah, that not every tzorech is equal to tzorech mufo and to tzorech mekomo. Tzorech mufo means I need to use it, right, for something that I can only accomplish by using it. Tzorech mekomo means I need the place. Tzar bali chayim is a totally different type of tzorech. It doesn't count. And so you would need to come up with this type of, you know, tiltol, shala achayad, and, you know, niwur, and whatever it might be, because to prevent tzar bali chayim is not considered a sufficient tzorech. The basis of that, I think, is what the Meiri says, that it's got to be tzorech mikol mamish, the tzorech mikol mamish, and if it's some sort of a different type of tzorech, even though it's important for Shabbos and it's consistent with these values, that would not justify moving the muktzah. Yes, that's a very good point. That's hefset. It's a different story. Killing the animal, you know, it's hefset. You're going to lose it, the investment that you made when you purchased it. But tzar bali chayim means that the animal is uncomfortable. That's, you know, he's commanded to be rachmanim. Says that a kaddish baruch hu v'racham av al kol ma'asav. So we also have to have rachmanos on all creatures, not just on
people.
Right, so the Ramban says the rule of tzar bali chayim is if you feel yourself becoming more cruel because you're ignoring the pain of the animal, so then there's a mitzvah of tzar bali chayim to alleviate that pain. Right? And if you don't know, you know, how it impacts you, you should assume if you see an animal in pain and then you don't do anything, right? So that sort of is training yourself perhaps to be cold and uncaring when others are in pain. And so the basic idea is that anything that you need to do in order to maintain that your level of rachmanos and empathy and compassion is considered to be the, you know, fulfillment of the mitzvah of avoiding tzar bali chayim. So again, the Chachamim themselves, when they made legislation, they made loopholes in their legislation in order to make sure that people would have the opportunity to be merciful to animals. They didn't want to create legislation that was now going to cause animals to suffer and more pain, because the Chachamim are compassionate and they want to make sure that their legislation doesn't get, you know, and doesn't cause extra tzar to animals, and that's part of the loopholes. But again, it's not based on tzorech mufo and tzorech mekomo, because tzorech mufo and tzorech mekomo are defined narrowly rather than broadly. Yes.
How about frog baseball?
What's frog baseball?
You play baseball, but you, for the ball, you use a frog.
Oh. On Shabbos.
But not on Shabbos.
No, that's what I'm saying.
You know, if you go through the different sources, right, the Shulchan Aruch paskens tzar bali chayim is rabbanon, right, in other words, that it's a Torah value, but it was only enshrined in law, right, by
I grew up in a yeshivish bungalow colony whose people were throwing frogs and baseball are now Rosh Yeshivas. So.
Are now Rosh
Yeshivas. Now Rosh Yeshivas. They were 12 years older.
But the Rambam passed the tzar bali chayim in Jiraisa. And Rav Schechter told me that there's a Tshuva to Rambam someplace, which I haven't been able to find, that says that the source for tzar bali chayim is a pasuk where the Malach says to Bilam, Alma, Kifisa et Ashoyka, why do you hit your donkey? He says, that's in the car the Rambam says for tzar bali chayim, why do you hit your donkey? So, you know, so he points out there's a difference between actually causing pain to animals and seeing an animal in pain, having a mitzvah to take it out of its pain, and causing pain to animals, right, might be much, you know, more usher than simply neglecting to take an animal out of its pain. That's the Malach to Bilam. I'm all you I'm happy that they're Rosh Yeshiva, but I don't think that we could bring a raya from their useful antics.
No, I didn't say that. I meant Well, I didn't play, but I know Rosh Hashiva. Okay, I'm sorry.
So again, moving onwards. So this is question 81. Achronim explain, right? The rabbi's laws for klishim malachol leheter are similar to our laws for klishim malachol leisser in two ways. And we said rabbi says klishim malachol leheter may not be moved to save it from damage. We say klishim malachol leisser may not be moved to save it from damage. And based on that, we say that just like rabbi's klishim malachol leheter cannot be moved for other, right, non-sorech purposes, our klishim malachol leisser cannot be moved for other non-sorech purposes. So again, Sar Bali Chaim is out to save us to make the table more Shabbat-lit, right, is out. We're not allowed to move things for those purposes. It's got to be a genuine Sorech Rufo or Sorech Mikomo. And so at the end of the day, can I put these electronic toys back on their shelves? This is the question to ponder. Right now they're underneath, right, the rack of shelves. I want to be polite. I want to leave, right, the house as clean as I found it. Am I allowed to put these electronic toys, right, back on their shelves? Or do we say that no, right, it's Muktzah, it's the Klishim Alachol the Isser? What would you say? I should come back after Shabbat and clean up the basement.
And it's out of the way. No, it's in the middle of the floor. You can trip it.
So nimninu vigamarnu, that you're not allowed to put those electronic toys back. You got to leave them there, right, underneath the toy bin. And if you want to be nice, you can come back on Motzai Shabbos after Havdalah and finish cleaning it up. That seems to be the Pesach Halacha. That just like you're not allowed to use these sticks to skin the carbon Pesach, and when you could theoretically use your hands just as well, it's the narrow construction, the narrow definition of Tzorech Rufo, Tzorech Mekomo, and so that would exclude the Tzorech of politeness as well, the same way that it excludes the Tzorech of Tzara Bali Chaim and the Tzorech of making the table more Shabbos-tick.
Do we hold like a blazer or a wrap?
In terms of these Mishnayos?
Yes.
In halacha lemaisa, doesn't make a difference.
Well,
oh no, we hold like Abba.
Yeah. Right.
Meaning we hold again the Shulchan Aruch Paskus. Halacha leheter, we can't move the Shulchan Aruch Torah. And the Mishnah Berurah Paskus, halacha leisser, we can't move the Shulchan Aruch Torah. We definitely accept that interpretation of the Mishnah. It's not Rabbi Elazar's dismissal of the Mishnah as all contemporary relevance. Okay, scenario number 8, which is on the next side, right, of this sheet over here. This is actually a very interesting one. Someone left, I shouldn't have picked a scientific calculator. Mm-hmm. Someone left a laptop, right, on, in this case on the challah board, right, put it anywhere on the Shabbos table. Obviously, right, it's not Muktzah Machmas Chesser and Kiss, because if it were, they would have made sure to put it back, right, where it belongs. They wouldn't have left it, right, where, on the challah board, or where some, baby could put it on the challah board. So it's not Muktzah Machmas Chesser and Kiss. The question is, may I move it normally as a klishim alachto leisser l'tzorech mekomo because I need the space for the challah, or must I use tiltol min atzad because maybe the calculator is muktzah machmas gufo? Now, where did this come from? So the basic issue that's at stake over here is what is called kli shekol nalachto leisser, right? Something which is only used for forbidden purposes that are not allowed to be done on Shabbos. Now, that's going to be different from a regular klishim malachol leisser, a hammer. And we took a poll and we discovered that most people use hammers for building, for construction. But some people, right, sometimes, right, use hammers for cracking coconuts. Right, we talked, I think, about, what was it, last week, that most people, most of the time, use for doing electronic, functions and calculating things. But sometimes, right, people will use it as a paperweight. Right, and so that becomes a kli, which is most of its malacha is le'isser, but some of its malacha, sometimes people use it leheter. And we're coming up with an example of something that nobody ever uses for a permissible reason, such as right? A phone, right? Or a computer, right? Or maybe a calculator. You have to get more data on that, about whether people use it as a paperweight or not. But the basic idea is a kli shekol melachto the iser, that nobody ever uses it for a permissible purpose on Shabbos, even though theoretically it's ra'oi and suitable to be used for such a purpose. So that's what we're going to discuss next. And in order to do this, we're going to do a very similar methodology to what we did a moment ago. In other words, a moment ago, we looked at the opinion of Rabbah, which we reject, right? But we said, since Rabbah applies this set of halachos to klisha malachto leheter, we apply the same set of halachos to klisha malachto leiser. So presumably, right, klisha malachto leiser for us has the same dinim as klisha malachto leheter for Rabbah. So we're going to be doing the same thing in the upcoming sugya. We're going to be looking at the opinion of Rabbi Nechemya. Rabbi Nechemya has a very strict opinion about muktzah. He says you can only use things for the purpose they were built to be used for. Right, so your glasses may only be moved for seeing, and your fork can only be moved for eating, right, and so on and so forth. Everything, according to Rabbi Nechemya, may only be moved for the purpose that it was meant to be used for. And we're going to see that Rabbi Nechemya has a certain set of halachos within that worldview, and that set of halachos resembles the halachos that we apply, right, to something else. And so the question is going to be, can we generalize what Rabbi Nechemya says in his world, right, to the objects that we apply that to in our world? So let's take a look at Rabbi Nechemya's Shita, and we'll find out what the halacha is about Kli Shekol Melachto Le'iser. So we're on the Mishnah, the bottom of the narrow lines on Kuf Kaf Dalet Amud Aleph. And the Mishnah says, Kol HaKelim Nitalin, that everything that's a kli, right, again, usable, reusable, processed, and whatever the other characteristics of a kli are, people call it a kli. It's got some sort of a base people and other characteristics as well. They can be moved, letzorech, v'shalo letzorech, right, if you need them, and also if you don't need them, right, again, presumably it's referring to mechama letzel, where you're moving them to protect them from damage, even though you don't need them or their space. But Rabbi Nechemya says, "Ein mitalin ela letzorech." They can only be moved for a need, for a necessity. And the Gemara is going to define it more precisely. It can only be moved if you need them for the purpose that they were made for. So the Gemara asks, "Mai letzorech, umai shelo letzorech." What does it mean? You can move a kli, right, both if there is a necessity and if there's no necessity. So Amar Rabba, this is the same Rabba that we saw earlier, and he's going to be consistent with himself. Letzorech means davar shemalachto leheter. Letzorech gufo. Shelo letzorech means davar shemalachto leheter. Letzorech mikomo. And davar shemalachto leiser, if you want to know what the halacha is, letzorech gufo in, yes. Letzorech mikomo, no, but you can't move a kli shemalachto leiser according to Rabbah. Letzorech mikomo, you can't move kli shemalachto leheter according to Rabbah. Nechama letzel. Also, Rabbi Nechemya l'meimah, Rabbi Nechemya comes now to restrict, to be more strict than the Tana Kama. And he says, "Afilu davar shemalachto leheter," even something whose purpose is permitted on Shabbos, "Letzorech gufo in, letzorech mikomo lo," you can only move it, "Letzorech gufo." So that's Rabbah. Amar lei Rava, right, Rava we also encountered, that was Rabbi Cohen's, right, defense of the Shulchan Aruch, that some people might say that earlier it was Rava. How does Rava interpret this Mishnah? He has a kasha on Rava. He says, "Letzorech mikomo, shelo letzorech karisa lei." How can you call tzorech mikomo shelo letzorech? What do you mean? It's almost an oxymoron. You need to move it, and you're saying that you don't need to move it. If you need it, then it's necessary. If you don't need it, it's not necessary. Chama letzel, you'll notice, is not prefaced with the word letzorech mechama letzel, because that's genuinely unnecessary. But tzorech gufo is itzorech, and tzorech mekomo is itzorech. And therefore, he says, how can you, Rabba, say that tzorech mekomo is not a necessity? Therefore, Rava says, Ella amar Rava, letzorech. When the Tanakhama says you can move something with Tzorech, that means davar shemalachto leheter, bein letzorech gufo, bein letzorech mekomo. When the Tanakhama says you can move kli shemalachto leheter shelo letzorech, that means afilu mincham itself, to protect us from damage. And davar shemlachu leisr, if you want to know what the halacha is, so there we'll pass in letzorach gufo letzorach mekomo in mincham letzel lo. And also Rabbi Nechemya lemeimar afilu davar shemlachu leheter letzorach gufo letzorach mekomo in mincham letzel lo. So the key question here is the question that we started with the first day, right, that we learned this parak, and that is, what does the word afilu mean? And afilu always indicates that there is a small surprise, right, before and a big surprise afterward. And so Rabbi Nechemya here uses the word afilu. He says, afilu davar shemalachto lehater letzorach gufo letzorach mekomo in mechama letzel lo. So the question is, what is the small surprise and what is the big surprise? Okay, so here again, let's just turn to the questions here. Aha, exactly what I wrote here. What is the small surprise and what is the big surprise? I think that you're supposed to tell me what the small surprise and the big surprise are, and then I'm going to tell you that it's either you said Rashi or you said the Rashba. Right, so I need somebody to tell me what the small surprise and the big surprise is. Because otherwise, I'm just going to have to give it away. I say, well, Rashi says this, and the Rashi says that, and they won't have all of the excitement. So that's the case, and what's the halacha that's surprising about it? Okay, so you're saying, is that the big surprise or the small surprise? Because afilu always indicates not only, right, the small surprise, but even this, which is a bigger surprise. So the big surprise, you're telling me, is a chumrah, that a klisha malachto leheter, right, cannot be moved mechama letzel. So let's just infer from there. So what's the small surprise? The small surprise, then, is...
Not the gufo, the mekomo.
Again, afilu davar shemalachto leheter, letzorach gufo letzorach mekomo in mechama letzel lo. So you're saying the small surprise is that it could be moved letzorach gufo letzorach mekomo, and the big surprise is that it cannot be moved mechama letzel.
Because that opposes Rabbah.
Everything could be a surprise.
The small surprise is probably about a klisim l'achol.
It's more likely about a klisim l'achol isser, because if your reading is correct, then the word afilu should have come in the middle. Right? The word afilu comes before both the halachos of Tzorach Gufo and Tzorach Mekomo, and before the halacha of Mechama L'tzel, both before the Kula of Tzorach Mekomo and before the Kula of Mechama L'tzel. So it's going to be something, the small surprise, the unspoken small surprise, has got to be something about a klisha malachto the isser.
What?
We want to say the small surprise is that a klisha malachto the isser, the tzorach gufo, could be moved, and the big surprise is that a klisha malachto the heter, mechama letzel, can't be moved. Yeah. Now you're telling me half a rash and half a rash. Usually we like there to be a symmetry between the small surprise and the big surprise, meaning it should flow. So maybe I would have said, a kli shemalachto le'isser cannot be moved mechama letzel. That's not such a big surprise, because it's a kli shemalachto le'isser. Right? Then the bigger surprise is, afilu kli shemalachto leheter cannot be moved mechama letzel. That's a much bigger surprise, because it's a kli shemalachto leheter. And so that's the most limited version of what this afilu is telling me. Not only do we have this chumrah by klisha malachto le'isser, which is not so surprising, but the chumrah of not moving a mechama letzel even applies to klisha malachto leheter, which is more surprising. That seems to be the formulation of Rashi, that the parallel between isser and heter only extends to the realm of mechama letzel. The Rashba, however, extends it. He says, notice, the Rabbi Nechemya doesn't focus exclusively on Mechama Letzel. Rabbi Nechemya has a very long sentence. He says, "Afilu kli shemalachto le'isser le'tzorach gufo le'tzorach mekomo may be moved, mechama le'tzel may not be moved." So let's apply that to a kli. Sorry, to kli shemalachto le'isser. Let's say the small surprise is the small surprise is that a kli shemalachto le'isser may be moved. But not mechama letzel. And the big surprise is that a klisha malachto leheter may be moved, letzorach gufo letzorach mekomo, but may not be moved mechama letzel. Apply that afilu to the entire sentence of Rabbi Nechemya. And that's the reading of the Rashba. Yes. The small surprise is klisha malachto leiser may be moved letzorach gufo letzorach mekomo, but not mechama letzel. The big surprise is that klisha malachto leheter also may be moved the tzorach gufo letzorach mekomo, but may not be moved mechama letzel.
Why not? Because if it's leheter, why shouldn't it be able to be moved mechama letzel?
Rabbi Nechemya is very machmir. He says, in klinikal elokim.
It's like his namesake.
Okay, so let me just finish with this. So practically, right, what difference does it make whether you incorporate that tzorach gufo tzorach mekomo into the afilu, right, or not? So this is an incredible chaf that the Rashba has. He says, Rabbi Nechemya's shita is that you can only move something for the purpose that it was created for. You can only move your glasses in order to enhance your sight. You can only move a plate in order to make eating more dignified and efficient. You can only move a sefer in order to learn from it. You can only move something for the purpose that it was made. And now, says the Rashba, I have a kasha. Right? A pen was made for what purpose?
Writing.
So that means that what can you move it for on Shabbos?
Right.
But you can't, right? It's not that you can never move it at Tzorach Gufo. The only thing you can move it for, right, then is Tzorach Mekomo. So the Rashba says, isn't that interesting? You can split Tzorach Gufo from Tzorach Mekomo. In other words, something that can never be moved at Tzorach Gufo can still be moved at Tzorach Mekomo. That's what the Rashba wants to do with Rabbi Nechemya. He says, if you accept this idea that a kli shemalachto le'iser, according to Rabbi Nechemya, right, can be moved letzorach mekomo, so then it forces you to say that even things which cannot be moved letzorach gufam, like a pen, can still nevertheless be moved letzorach mekomo. And it's only one step from there to talk about our kli shekol malachto le'iser, right? According in our universe, where regular klisha malachto le'iser could be moved with tzorach gufo, in other words, for something that it wasn't intended for, but which is nonetheless ra'ui for, right? But if it's kol malachto le'iser, it means it's something that nobody ever uses except for iser. So in other words, you can't move it ever with tzorach gufo. On Shabbat. And it does for hilchos mukta, that doesn't count because it's not anticipated for whatever reason. Right? There's a lot of things. Sometimes tzal kashas do anything, doesn't count for mukta. Right. So the Rashba wants to prove from here that something which has no passable or conceivable use letzorach gufo may still be moved letzorach mekomo. Right? Rashi, right, who rejects that idea that a kli shemalachto leiser for Rabbi Nechemya can be moved letzorach mekomo. Right, is not going to need to concede to the Rashba, and we'll pick off with reviewing this and expanding in Mirat Hashem tomorrow.
In the big Talmud Tuchim, there's a will, when there's a will, there's a way.
There's a rabbinic will, there's a way.